we're back again.
Yes. Back. I mean, I guess this is actually back to our normal schedule, so it's not like there's been a long break.
Are you okay?
Whoa. Now I am.
Welcome to BC is Creepy. I'm Topher Graham.
I'm Ariel Hansen.
And today, it's my topic.
What's your topic?
We're going to talk about ghost towns.
Spooky.
So, if you're listening from outside of BC, and there might be a fair number of you, I want to tell you that this whole province is just really great to look around and see, because it's beautiful and it's lush.
And it's spooky.
And it's spooky.
And it's creepy.
And it's creepy.
Oh man, that just reminds me, Colin's mom's been posting photos of the fog in her front yard and stuff. Looks so cool. Oh, I love fog.
This week we've been blessed with like a giant rolling in of just fog.
Yep.
And so it's been very thick, and it just looks really cool.
Loving those Silent Hill vibes.
Totally. It's been a crazy week.
Yeah. So where are we going to with this podcast today?
I want to start with Wallachian. This topic of Wallachian was actually a recommendation from Anna Hargit.
I think.
Anna Hargit?
Anna! You know who you are.
Yeah. She's a costumer.
Yeah, she worked on Paint the Town Red.
Yeah.
And Ready to Burst.
Great suggestion. Happy to use it. Yeah, so Wallachian was a ghost town, or was a town. It's located in the Thompson County region of British Columbia, and about 10 kilometers west of Kamloops Lake, and 65 kilometers west of Kamloops on the south shore of the Thompson River near Highway 1. So, pretty interior.
Yep. I've never been to Kamloops, so this is all imagination time for me.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting. This is like, the saga of Wallachian began in 1907 when Charles Barnes, like Jordan.
Or my middle school challenge program teacher.
Mr. Barnes?
Yeah.
Awesome.
His first name was Mitch.
So Charles Barnes was an American entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and he was working as a land surveyor at Ashcroft and visited Charles Penny's ranch. Lots of Charles.
Very popular name back then.
In 1907. But he had a 2-acre orchard, and I guess it was very, like, a very impressive thing in such a very dry land.
Ah.
So.
You could grow a lot of figs. Yeah. Although, wait, no, because further north, they actually get snow there. Maybe not.
Well, Barnes envisioned thousands of acres of lush orchards and an elegant community of gentlemen farmers, primarily of the English upper class and aristocracy.
Gentlemen farmers. Those two things, they don't sound like they would go together. Like, I'm an aristocrat, and now I'm working on a farm. That's well, like trying to combine the two accents.
Well, you know, in 1907, being a farmer might have been a really, really, like, good profession.
Well, it was hard work.
Oh, yeah.
Very hard work.
So for financial backing of this grand vision, he contacted a company in England called the British Columbia Development Association. And in 1909, the town was named Wallachian, and they started developing and bringing in people. So Wallachian was no ordinary pioneer community, but had, like, crazy luxuries.
Oh, like what? Running water?
Well, the Wallachian Hotel had an elegantly appointed dining room, 3 rotundas, and...
What's a rotunda?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, gosh. It's okay. We'll just edit it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
We edited a lot of stuff out.
Yeah. And I'll be editing this time, so it'll be, like, a lot smoother.
What do you mean?
Well, like, last week, there was that, like... little thing that was still in the episode when we were talking about your cat and like
I edited that out.
No, It was, it like made it to
what?
To
the no, I swear I remember editing that out.
No, like last I was listening to it at work actually, and
okay, that's really weird. Like I swear I edited it out. I can show you after.
It's okay. We'll get it next time.
Okay.
But
maybe you can edit that part out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So there was a strictly enforced dress code.
Oh, like in the entire community or just what? A community dress code?
These were fancy, rich English people. So many of the townspeople lived in fine stone homes with high ceilings and large fireplaces, and there were servants and maids and valets.
These don't sound like pioneers.
No, this is like some rich kid's fantasy town. There was a Chinese laundry, a polo field.
Wow.
A swimming pool, a skating rink, tennis courts, a post office. And there was even, like, in 1912, they had a newspaper, the Wallachian Times. So, and they erected a community hall.
So, like, how... This sounds like a great place to move to if you're looking to move west. Why did it become a ghost town?
We'll get there.
Okay, okay.
So think of all those things that we had, including, like, the hotel, which had a spot for formal dress teas twice a week, and dances and fishing and high-stakes poker card games. And by 1914, the community had grown to nearly 300.
That's not a lot of people.
No. So I have a quote from a book by Wallachian, Birth of a Legend by Larry Jacobson. He says, "There would have been no more fresh blood to purchase and populate the Wallachian farms. Of the 3,265 acres acquired from the Dominion government by the Barnes Estate on the north side of the river, only about 750 acres had been developed by 1914. 1914. This is an important year, not just for Wallachian or BC.
But the world.
Canada. The world. Yeah, World War I broke out, and the prices for fruit and produce were, like, halved.
Oh.
So you have these rich farmers with their expensive homes and servants, and they're making their money from produce, and all of a sudden the world goes to war, and everything cheaper. And not only that.
Like, also, you've got a community like that, like, how are they going to...
People are leaving.
People are leaving, but also, like... If there's only 300 people, inbreeding would start pretty fast, and there's not going to be enough of the servant class within the community to sustain itself.
That would be true.
Except it didn't even last that long.
No, it got to be like a decade, and like all the fellas left for war.
Yeah.
A lot of them didn't come back, and all of a sudden you couldn't even sustain the farms. So you're not making enough money, you don't have the manpower, everybody's gone, your family's dead, it's time to move. However, there's still like 30 people that live there.
Oh, yeah. They still grow fruit?
They might. So, I guess I'll save the sources.
Yeah, just you do all the sources at the end.
Till the end. I have another ghost town.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, Sandin, British Columbia. Is located in the Selkirk Mountains, about 10 kilometers east of the town of New Denver.
Well, where's the town of New Denver?
It's like really far south. This is like very close to the south border of British Columbia, but kind of central.
Okay, because I was going to say, we're really far south, Topher. That's all relative.
I think this one's the closest to us.
Okay, but it's like, what's the nearest town to New Denver, I guess? When you're looking at the map.
Gosh. If you go really far east, about middle of the province.
Okay.
That's where you'll find this. Well, you won't find much. Sandin was incorporated as a city on January 1st, 1898.
Oh.
And for a few years boasted a little bit more than 5,000 residents.
Oh, that's nothing to... stick your nose up at.
And a booming economy, and even brothels.
Of course. I'm surprised the other place didn't have those, especially with rich people and their weird fetishes.
Yeah. The other one just didn't make it. It didn't have enough time.
Yeah.
Two different railways were racing to reach the town first. The Kaslo and the Slocan Railway, which would have connected Sandon with nearby Kaslo and Kootenay Lake. So that might give you an idea of...
Honestly, I have not seen a lot of this province. So.
No, me neither. I've driven past places on buses and in cars.
Yeah.
But this one actually had, like, acts of sabotage that was committed on top of the railroads.
What?
Yeah.
Intrigue. And, danger. Sabotage.
And well into the 1900s, the hills around Sandon were actively mined by Silversmith, the Slocan Star, and the Payne. So these were, like, different mining companies.
Yeah.
Sandon lasted pretty long, but with silver prices plummeting. And then they had a giant flood in, like, 1955. And then looters came in and just, like, tore the whole town apart.
Oh, damn looters.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I mean, that's kind of like what happens with the fires, but the opposite, because it's wet. Water puts out fire, but also destroys.
Sandon was gone long before that.
Yeah.
By, like, metal prices were declining, and by 1910, a major forest fire had burnt out most of the line on the railway and forced it into bankruptcy, and many of the area's mining camps and mills were burnt down, and people just kept moving away because it was terribly unlucky. By 1913, recession and disaster, the city of Sandon was forced into receivership, so it went bankrupt.
Oh, wow.
But Sandon had a better fate with World War One.
Oh, so it wasn't the killer of cities.
No. In 1914, metal prices had gone right back up, and that mining town had gotten a little bit of prosperity and a little bit better population. It would have been okay.
Yep.
If that bankruptcy didn't really, like, kill the city government. So by 1920, Sandon was formally disincorporated, and all of the authority over municipal affairs went back to the province, and then their city hall was actually given to a provincial police constable for office and residence.
Oh.
So, meanwhile, parents were getting upset over, like, conditions, especially in the schoolhouse.
What was up with the schoolhouse?
It was deteriorating just because the province wasn't taking care of the city. So they were petitioning the provincial government to convert the old city hall into a new schoolhouse. And
I'm guessing the dude who got to live there and use it as his office was like, no.
He got relocated, and then it was stripped, and it began a more prosaic period as the Third Sandon Schoolhouse, which became abandoned in 1954. And it was completely demolished for lumber.
Great.
That's not even the worst thing that happened to the city.
No? What was the worst thing?
It was used as a Japanese-Canadian internment camp during World War II.
Wow, it really does get worse.
Yeah, this place is unlucky.
Yeah. Oh, that's horrible.
It's still better off than Wallachian.
Yeah.
It has a few buildings, a couple of trolley buses, handful of residents. I think it was around, like, 55.
Okay.
Maybe more. All the railways have been dismantled and turned into hiking trails, and there's, like, a little museum. Yeah. But they get, like, 20,000 visitors.
Oh.
Every year.
That's actually nothing to shake your fist at.
No. It's a little museum ghost town.
Oh. That's cute.
With a cute little mining history and, yeah.
That's cute. It's a cute ghost town with a horrible history that involves incredible racism.
Yeah, and I won't get too much into it, but
no.
They were crimes.
Yeah.
Absolute war crimes. And I have one more town to talk
about. Another town!
Another town, Kissolt, BC. So this is, like, the opposite end.
So north?
Yep. It's okay. An unincorporated settlement on the north coast of British Columbia at the head of Alice Arm Observatory Inlet and at the mouth of the Kissolt River.
Okay.
So this one is much later.
Yeah.
It was home to mining camps for quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the town of Kissel was established in 1979 as the home community to the molybdenum mine, run by the Phelps Dodge Corporation of the United States. So they wanted to...
strip our resources.
Well, they had already been mining. They wanted to create a more permanent setup so that people would stay instead of just coming to, like, work and leave.
So that they could sell things to them to get the money that they paid them. So just
and have a stable workforce. Is what they would say.
They wanted to vertically integrate.
Yeah. But they designed the community for 1,200 residents. They built a shopping mall, a restaurant, a swimming pool, bowling alley. But in 1882, the price for molybdenum crashed. And within like 18 months, and the entire community was evacuated. Just like, no work, they got them out.
Wow. So they had shopping malls in the 1800s?
No, this is like 1982.
Oh, I thought you said 1882, and I was like...
No.
A mall? Why would they have a mall? There weren't mall rats back then.
They threw like $43 million into this town. It had a Sears outlet, a sporting goods store, a swimming pool, curling rink, movie theater, a pub, single-family homes and apartments, racquetball courts, a hospital. They were like ready for the workers to like raise families and retire.
But
this would have been in like 1982 when they were trying to like revitalize this whole project. The price of the metal crashed again, and 18 months after the town opened, the mine was shut down completely. And there still might be a future for Kisselt.
Yeah.
In 2004, the entire town was bought by Indian American businessman Krishnan Suthran Thiran bought the entire town for $5.7 million. And he's since spent $2 million maintaining the town. And the estimates for fully restoring the town is about $20
million. Oh, wow.
But unlike the other towns, he's completely shut this place off to the public. So
it'd be a little breaking and entering if you want to check it out.
Yeah. It has a occupancy of 1, which is really funny.
He lives there alone? That's so sad.
He has a house there, but I highly doubt that he lives there.
Could you imagine, though, if he was like, I want to be a hermit, but I want to have places to walk around to. I'm going to buy this whole ghost town.
Oh, I would do that 100%. If I had $6 million, you better believe I'd buy my own town to just, like, chill out and do whatever I wanted.
Imagine the films you could make.
Yeah. The parties you could have.
You wouldn't have to get permits because you just owned the place.
Yeah. It would be my town. So it's been proposed as a location for liquefied natural gas.
Fuck fracking.
Yeah.
We're already earthquake prone. We don't need more.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been proposed for the LNG pipeline so far.
Great. Man, this has just been good news podcast today.
No, this is towns that have died. Ghost
Maybe
towns.
Some of them should stay dead.
Kisselt, BC. So
it's not like we have any listeners from there who we could insult.
Just watch. We're going to get an email from Krishnan. He's going to be like, fracking's the future.
No.
We need this economy in Canada.
Renewable resources are the future.
Yeah.
Green energy.
If we Green even energy. Survive till then.
Yeah. If we want to have a future, which most people don't want us to from the looks of it.
No. So Wikipedia was a great resource.
Yeah.
gave me a lot of like just point note history.
Yeah.
Wallachian, I had an article from the Merritt Herald.
Okay.
And
I've been to Merritt.
Yeah, me too. There's a nice little river there and a really cool festival.
There's like a diner that feels like the kind of diner you see in movies, where it's like all old lady waitresses.
Yeah, I went to a pub there that was very pubbish. The Ashcroft Cache Creek Journal was a really nice, just like a lot of like personal stories, which was really neat to see. So Sandon, they have a museum. The museum has a website.
The website has information. About the information got used in the podcast.
Yeah. And
it's a chain of events.
And Global News had a really cool article about Kissel.
Ah.
So, very standard kind of sources today.
Yeah, nothing weird.
But three very interesting, like, town stories.
Ah.
It's a big, natural, resource-rich province. We have lots of, like, towns that pop up and...
disappear.
So that was Ghost Towns.
Woo! Spooky!
Do we have anything to plug this week, Carrie?
I mean, because now that we're now recording week to week, Vinyl Girls Berlin is coming up at the end of the month.
Sweet.
And, I've been a little sad because there's, like, a lot of articles that have been going on, like, announcing the lineup and stuff, but the articles keep skipping the block that Nepenthes is playing in.
Oh.
So it's, like, Nepenthes and a bunch of other films aren't getting mentioned.
No.
Yeah. So that's been kind of sad. So but it is playing. It's a part of, like, the Midnight Movies block, so.
If you're in Berlin...
go see it.
Go see Nepenthes.
Yeah. On the big screen.
I want to give a big thank you to Anna, who suggested...
and her mom.
And her mom, who suggested Wallachian and Ghost Towns as today's topic.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So if you have topic suggestions, hit us up.
Badcookiepictures@gmail.com.
We have a website, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Pinterest. We are on Patreon.
Yes, if you want to become part of the cookie community of the bad variety, you can become one of our patrons. We did a draw. Congratulations to Ariel. She won some stuff. Not me, Ariel. A different Ariel. and so we're doing patron-only draws now for things. We're trying to create some patron-exclusive content. You'll get, like, extended cuts of some of our stuff. There's a Discord where we talk with our patrons. As well, if there's another way that you can support the podcast, and that is by subscribing, hitting that like button, leaving positive reviews, all those kinds of things. That really helps us out. That gets the word out there. Or just tell your friends about our podcast.
Yeah, share it. Talk to people. We have a lot of really fun stories. And we're also available now on YouTube and Vimeo.
Yeah, so we've been posting a lot of stuff on YouTube. You might actually be listening to this podcast on YouTube. But we've got some of our short films. We've got Women in Horror interview series. We've started to do some short film reviews. All sorts of stuff.
So we're expanding and we're working hard to bring you guys content. So any bit of support, sharing... liking, just interacting with us is a really helpful way to keep all this coming at you.
Oh, if you want to find me on anything and you don't want to find Bad Cookie, I don't know. My personal stuff is at Hanson's Horror for like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram as Sneezing Wolf. But
don't check him for him on the other things because he ain't there.
You might find stuff and it's not
active. Be disappointed.
Yeah.
Very disappointed. It's like you log on to your Twitter and all of a sudden there's like 500 messages all from people asking you stuff about the podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
And you're like, oh no, I've been ignoring them for all this time.
I don't even have the passwords anymore.
Boom, boom. So if you want to hack an account... Topher's Instagram account, not Instagram, Twitter account. Yeah. Highly hackable.
Especially if you're a bot. I guess until next week, you guys.
Yeah, stay creepy.